Technorama, episode 425, Scooty Puff Jr.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
TK421, why aren't you at your post? Where the is that trooper?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm extremely happy. Do you know why?
Why is that?
I have Weird Al tickets, and I'm ready.
Awesome.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Now, what's the date on that concert?
In Charlotte, June 19th.
June, you got to buy them this far in advance. Wow.
Way ahead.
Very cool. And I know that Scott Tyler, our mutual friend, has Rush tickets in Chicago for about the same date. So, yeah, that would make sense.
Mm. Yeah, I saw Rush a few years ago in Charlotte. Had a great time. I would totally go see him again, but Weird Al, I couldn't pass it up.
Also joining us in the studio is... we're not done. I do that every...
The right music.
We're done. See ya. Again. We're slowly getting the hang of this.
That's funny. That's the Slice Rejoinder music. So, hey, I'm Michael Armenier.
He stole our unlicensed song that he gave us in 2006.
It's totally licensed, by the way. Asterisk.
It's actually buyout music, so it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's legal. It's legal.
I own it. You own it. We're all together, so it's fine.
We're all part of the podcasting commune.
That's right. Well, this studio especially.
Yeah. All power to the engines.
That's right.
All right. Let us proceed. There we go. That's what I wanted.
Proceeding.
Coming up in this episode, it's an all remember when episode with old film, radical scientists, and light bulbs. All that and more coming up right after this.
What's a light bulb?
What's a light bulb?
Welcome to Technorama Ball 1.0. I'm George Michael, and joining me here is John Maddening.
Hello, George.
This is going to be an incredible matchup today between Seattle Windows and the Cupertino Max. Couldn't have asked for anything better.
Let's take a look at the stats. Windows says they have a strong defense. However, we've seen holes in that lineup before. The Apple team seems to have an ironclad security, but it's gone mostly untested. During the season, both teams have seen 16 interrupt requests and no drive crashes. With numbers like that, the game could go either way.
That's right. Thanks, John. And let's not forget that both teams have close relatives for quarterbacks. Neon Zeon Intel has been with Windows since essentially the beginning. And the brother Robert, who just started with Apple, has already been nicknamed Dual Core.
That's interesting. What is also a fascinating fact is that the fan makeup is about 95% Seattle Windows fans and about 5% Apple.
Well, there you have it, and it's time for the boot up, and away they go.
Oh, it's been a while since we heard that one, but I couldn't resist since this is Stupid Bowl Sunday.
Yes.
That we get into that.
Hey, by the way, on our live cam, I noticed you got our Parsec award.
Yes, whenever there's nothing to really say, Parsec is saying something.
Hey, I'm surprised
because
you
Parsec
don't have like
little, always says something.
Yeah. I'm surprised you don't have like little candles around it and like a little, you know.
That's next week.
Incense.
We had 5 minutes to put that together, so
it's in a box you can see it. It's like, oh yeah, Craig wanted the Parsec in the camera. Oh well.
You should put your little Enterprise floating above it or something.
I can do that.
We have voicemail. You know what? I'm just going to play it from here.
There you go.
Okay. There you go.
letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman, mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters, I love those letters. Let's find out what you got to say.
Oh, boy!
Mailman, mail today.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to start with the email since the audio will take us the rest of the way out. We have an email from Dean Jensen, a.k.a. Beaker One. Craig and Chuck, or Chuck and Craig, as it's written here, listening to episode 423. I knew you'd like that. Listening to episode 423, you asked what games people played during long car rides. Oh, way back in your childhood. I had one of the early cartridge handheld games, Microvision. Oh, he's got a link on here, Wikipedia. It was great for its time. There were a number of different games, and I thought the graphics were really good until one whole line of the LCD disappeared, and I couldn't see anything. Sounds like my iPod 5.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do a quick... Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. That's
a cool little handheld game. The Microvision was the very first handheld game console that used interchangeable cartridges.
Yep.
Oh, way before, years ahead of the Game Boy.
Yeah. That, way after my little thing that I was talking about.
It was released by the Milton Bradley Company in November 79. The Microvision was designed by Jay Smith, the engineer who would later design the Vectrex gaming console.
Holy cow.
The Microvision's combination.
79, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of portability and cartridge-based systems led to the moderate success, with Smith Engineering grossing $15 million in the first year.
Wow.
That's nice. However, very few cartridges, a small screen, and lack of support for the established home video game companies led to its demise in 1981. Mm. Ooh, short life. When they say small screen...
They're not kidding.
Oh my, it looks like it's about 1.25 by 1.25.
Actually, the screen is about a quarter of the whole size of the whole thing.
Less than that.
Less than that.
Probably less than
it's
that.
It's tiny.
Because there's a border around that, and it's an LCD, so.
Well, at least it didn't eat your batteries like the Mattel games did.
You know, I talked about my little LED game, and I actually looked that up. It was called Sub Hunter, is what the name of it. And I actually looked it up online, and that is actually one of the cooler games that came out. It came out right after the first pocket calculators came out. And I had one of those.
Yeah.
Remember the $110 pocket calculators?
Yes.
That just were pocket calculators. Yeah. But they were like $100. This was the same thing. This was right after that. And
see if you can get a simulator on your iPhone.
You know what? It'd be kind of cool.
Oh, I bet there is.
I bet
there's
you're
an app for that.
We also have some voicemail.
And now another message from Will the Computer Guy.
Hey, Chuck, Will the Computer Guy, and Craig, and whoever else is in the studio tonight.
Like me.
Hey, Chuck, you had that cookie, or you had that ad appear after watching the video of the flying TARDIS for ServiceNow. I actually have an answer to that question. I've done some internet marketing research, and apparently it's a type of cookie that travels with you between websites. And when there's an ad network that you have that cookie from, it notices what you've been doing, and bam,
wow.
Targeted ad. Kind of love it.
Oh, yeah.
Catch you later. Bye.
So that's what Facebook and Amazon and all of them are doing.
Yeah.
Because I search for one thing on the internet now,
and
I see ads for that thing that I searched on everywhere.
And like it's Amazon, either, you can read my mind.
Yeah.
It's either pulling up, YouTube is either pulling up ServiceNow ads, mm-hmm. which I work there, I really don't need more ads, or Arizona School of Massage.
What have you been doing on your weekends, Chuck?
You know, what's funny is I get ServiceNow ads everywhere, and I'm like, should I have really gotten that? I guess so. Okay. Maybe
I get Amazon ads. That's all I get because I'm on Amazon looking for things off and on during the day, and all I get is the stuff that I just looked at on Amazon on all my other pages.
That's funny.
We have another voicemail from Zahadoom.
Hey guys,
Zahadoom.
See you again, or Zahadoom, however you want to call me. just listened to the last episode and got a quick question. This is becoming Slice of Technorama since you're having all the old Slice.
Yes.
The sci-fi guys on?
Yes. We're going to rename it later.
Have a great one. 101.
And then take over the feed for both.
Pretty much, yes.
Slice-a-rama.
Zaha Doom.
I told you, Mike
if
left
you listen
behind.
To Zaha Doom, you will die.
That's what's happening.
That's Mike it. Left behind a lot of good things
including
in this house.
The entire Slice cast.
Thank you, everybody. If you want to get in touch with us, Craig isn't aware of this, but we did change the voicemail number.
What?
Yes.
Why is that?
Wait. This is supposed to be funny, but I'm dragging it out here.
No, I'm sorry. Really?
We have a new number.
Three.
Sorry, funny. I could not resist. Donna started watching the IT Crowd, and that one came up, and I just said, I've got to use it. No, really, if you want to call us on the listener line like these guys did, 206-222-CHAT, 206-222-2428, we need a banner at the bottom that says that.
Yeah, you can build one.
Yeah, I'm sure we can. Mike said we're headed down that slippery slope.
Yes.
They would change it, and I was like, well, we got to have some kind of record of keeping that number.
It's been about 10 years, yes.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the longest K7 numbers in existence.
No way, really?
Yeah, this is our original one, and it's almost died a couple times.
That's longer than Slice, and Slice just died recently.
The 8735 number is gone?
It is gone. That is
You know, we
done.
Should go... We should go do a tour of the K7 place. I don't know. It's probably some closet.
Probably.
The guy that owned it probably died and is just perpetually running.
I had some of the best K7 numbers for our shows, and they're gone. Like I had Geek.
Trek.
We had Trek.
Yep.
We had Beer.
Oh,
we
yeah.
We had, what was the other one that we had? Tech. And we had Tech. And they're gone.
All gone.
I'd have paid big money to keep some of those.
Let's do the history thing. On this day in history for February 4th, 2015, this is the 35th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 300 and approximately 30 days left in 2015. It was on this date in 1703 in Edo, which is now Tokyo, 46 of the 47 Ronin committed seppuku, the ritual suicide, as recompense for avenging their master's death. And did you know, odd historical fact, the one that survived is very well known today.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize this. There's even a dinner named after this guy. His name is Chicken Teriyaki.
No. Dude,
go, Craig.
You really
I don't
didn't.
Know if I can follow that up. All right, so February 4th, 1789, George Washington is anonymously.
Unceremoniously.
Elected the first president of the United States by the U.S. Electoral College.
So this music is appropriate.
There you go.
Mike, can you read that one?
No, absolutely. It was 79 years ago today that radium becomes the first radioactive element to be made synthetically.
Ooh, very cool.
That's big stuff right there.
Also today in 1967, Lunar Orbiter Program. The Lunar Orbiter 3 lifts off from Cape Canaveral's Launch Complex 13 on its mission to identify possible landing sites for the Surveyor and Apollo spacecraft.
Hey, Chuck was too quick. I was going to say, hey, Mike, that's heavy. Anyway, Facebook and mainstream online social network is founded by Mark Zuckerberg in 2004.
It's 11.
The world yawns.
It's a mainstream online. Anyway, happy birthday goes out in this day to Russian physicist and mathematician Nikolai Ulmov. Isn't that what those two dots above the U are?
That's what it is. Ulmov.
Born on this date in 1846.
Also born on this date in 1986, Germany physicist Friedrich Hund.
I think that there's a typo. That should be like 1896 or something.
I was going to say 1986, really?
The dude's like not even 30 yet.
How about 1896?
Go,
I
Craig.
Bet you that's it.
And the man who discovered Pluto, Clyde Tombaugh.
Yes.
Born today in 1906.
Notice I didn't say the planet Pluto.
Yes.
Also born on February 4th, 1927 is Rolf Landauer, the German-American physicist.
Oh, comedian, actor, and author David Brenner would have been 79 today.
I'm going to have to start pointing, but that doesn't work for Craig.
Yeah. Director and producer George A. Romero turns 75 today.
Also turning 75, a familiar tertiary character in many Star Trek film shows, John Shuck.
Really?
He was the ambassador on Star Trek 4 and 6. You'd know him if you saw him.
And finally, American computer scientist and co-developer of the B programming language. Yay. Ken Thompson turned 72.
Let the music go. It's also Sims Day to celebrate the launch of the Sims software game launched on this date in the year 2000. I thought it was older than that.
I thought that was older than that.
Yeah, no, it is. And also Sunday, February 8th, pay attention, is Clean Out Your Computer Day, but stay subscribed to Technorama, please.
Yeah, clean out almost everything.
Almost everything. I didn't say clean out the whole computer. Yeah, formats. Okay,
this is kind of a side, and I'm kind of derailing us for a second, but realize 2000... Remember Windows 95?
Yes.
Windows 98? Doesn't that seem like it was so much longer ago than it really is?
But people were using it until about 2008.
I know.
And then they upgraded to XP.
Exactly. Exactly.
Some people probably still use it, for crying out loud.
It's like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Computer and tech is kind of the anti aging and nostalgic thing. It seems like it gets older. It seems like it's older than it really is, even though it's so new. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's what I kept telling everybody on my birthday.
You're really old?
What? No, I don't understand.
Where you're older than you actually are? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I've tried a number of times to get Ken Thompson to upgrade from B to C, but he wouldn't go for it.
Nah, B is better.
I'm sticking with it. I invented it. That's the way it was on this day in history for February 4th, 2015. Turning to our listener calendar, we have a number of birthdays this week. You have a number of calendars if your insurance man or your realtor sends you stuff. February 7th, Chad W. Smith from Chattanooga, Tennessee. Also on the 7th, Brian the Big BS in PA.
Nice.
In Williamsport, PA. The 8th has two birthdays. Jan Scott, I believe, if we haven't massacred that enough times in the past, and Blake Noble, podcast Mike Wills from Minnesota.
Really?
I wonder if he's still podcasting. We'll have to ask him that.
I'm not sure.
He's February 9th. And February 10th is Zach Agulian from our old hometown, Appleton, Wisconsin. And Drace, or AKA Sherry from North Dakota. I would be curious, you people who seem to listen but never contribute, call us on the listener line or drop us an email or a message on Facebook and say, yes, I'm still out here. I was doing some research. We played the voicemail from Zaha Doom earlier, and I am still on the hunt for his old bumper where you hear all the voices going, Zaha Doom, Zaha Doom.
It's around here somewhere.
It is, and I can't find it. I tried tracing it by all the calls that he made in the past, but I have this gap in the data library that I can't find the exact one. It's either too old before we had the clip, or he called like once or twice after that.
Have you Googled it yet? It's probably lives in
I checked
in
my Gmail. I checked the Technorama Gmail. It's around somewhere. Or I can go through and listen to every voicemail show we did between 2009.
The next incarnation of Google is it's just going to start categorizing everything in everybody's head. So you'll be able to...
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, it'll be handy.
Google Hat.
It'll be really handy for the NSA. They don't even have to bug your phones anymore. They can just directly access your brain.
Happy birthday to all you people. If it's your birthday and you're not on our calendar, well, we wish you all the best. And if you want to be on our calendar, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki and we will do a shout out at the appropriate time of year. We'd love to hear from you. Can you believe it's already break time?
No.
Yes, it is. Let me
show you.
Show's
going fast.
Yes, it is. Is it? What are we at? I can't see the play clock is hiding. No, we're going. We're fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's
go for it.
Let's soldier on. All right, coming up, we got an all Remember When show, so you know what's coming right after this.
Welcome back to the Technorama 1.0 Halftime Status Update. I'm George Michael, and joining me once again is John Maddening.
Hello, George.
Both teams are really giving us a show today. Coach Jobs' presentation has been fantastic.
Coach Gates left me feeling a little bit flat. What was he thinking, putting Justin Timberlake in?
I don't know. Both GUIs have been impressive, but I would give Apple a slight edge here.
I would give the Seattle Windows defense high marks for fending off that Kama Sutra attack late in the last quarter.
Yeah, well, who didn't see that coming?
Now, going into the second half, one key to making fast plays here is defragmenting their offense and moving the bits down the field.
You are right, John. Going into the second half, we have Windows at 101 and Apple at 110. This has been your Technorama 1.0 halftime status update. Now, back to you, Chuck and Craig.
Who writes this stuff anyway?
That's pretty good stuff right there.
Cheesy laughs. Craig, can you tell us who's in the chat room now that we have a chat room to shout out to?
Craig? Hello?
You know what? It would be better if I didn't talk on mute.
That would help. Why are you muting yourself?
Maybe I like to cough when during the commercial break.
It doesn't matter. No one can hear you on this end.
Oh. You breaking? Are you muting it?
Yes, you are inaudible when we do that. I was just talking to Mike tonight about rewiring the board to get you in on a conversation and have this.
He's evil.
Backtrack.
He is so evil.
His head exploded.
He is so evil. He wants an IFB channel added to this system, which is not complex enough as it is.
Always something in it, Michael.
It started with a picture. So who's in the chat room, Craig?
Technorama podcast.
That's it.
That's it.
It's just us.
I guess, That's sad. Super Bowl.
Okay. Yeah, next time. They'll hear this and go, wow, the chat room's back. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's awesome because it's got video and really cool video, and it's great. And
well, see, the problem is for me is watching I can't watch the video because I'm seeing y'all about 30 seconds ago.
Oh, well, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I got to hide that part off the side of the screen.
Craig, I'm going to call you out on the way you set up these links. This is the Remember When segment, so we better play our Remember When song, right?
Yep.
That's track 7. Yeah, it is.
How are you calling me?
There we go. The first link we have is titled Code in a Bullet, or Code Hidden in a Bullet. But unfortunately, it takes me to this long thing about the Allied breakout in Normandy.
Is it not in there?
No. I remember seeing the news story, so we'll go on to the next one while you fix the link.
Normandy was fun. Let's talk about that.
No.
It was a party.
We're going to try another one. Every time travel movie trailer ever ranked. Over. We'll do that one while Craig goes and figures out what happened to that Code in a Bullet.
What the...
Every right. time travel movie ever made ranked, and some of them were pretty rank. I don't know if this is in from best to worst or worst to best, but number one is
best to worst. It says
Back to the Future, 1985. Of course, one of our favorites, right at the top.
Actually, was not bad. They did a pretty good job with their time travel in that.
It's 2015. Oh. I'm waiting for my.
Talking about the way it actually worked.
Yes,
you know, actually how time travel works
and the paradox in the whole thing. Yeah. Have you seen Primer?
Primer was fantastic.
I did not
fantastic.
See that. Okay.
Hey, by the way, I would say Back to the Future, I think they did such a good job trying to keep everything that happened in one part of the film congruent with whatever mm-hmm. happened in the later part of the film. Like,
they did a really good job.
Twin Pines and then the Lone Pines.
Exactly. I mean, there's so many little Easter eggs in that movie. They did a really good job with it.
Mm-hmm. Number three is Groundhog Day from 1990.
That's not a time travel movie.
It keeps looping.
It's a loop, but it's not a time travel. It's a really cool idea of a loop.
Further down on the list is Back to the Future 2. Then Time Bandits.
I like Time Bandits.
I have yet to sit through that.
Except for the end when the rock explodes in the toaster oven. Like, what?
I'm not sure what happens in the numbering system. Here it goes 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, .. 13. And then we get down to Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Those numbers are annotations on the picture.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Gotcha. Okay.
I thought we had a time travel in the notes.
Yeah, no.
Judgment Day shouldn't even be on the list.
The first one should be. Donnie Darko, 2001.
Yeah, that was actually pretty. Yeah, that's okay.
Looper,
2012? Looper, definitely. Definitely. I like Looper. 12 I like
Monkeys?
The way that works.
I am going
12
to.
12 Monks, yeah.
I'm going to have to put some stuff on. Terminator 2 is, or Terminator from 84 is down further.
Yeah.
Brigadoon from
Brigadoon. Oh, honestly, wow.
By the way, I would have put Terminator a little higher because...
Yes.
I actually have a new one that I just saw that should be on the top of every list ever.
What's that?
It's probably the greatest time travel movie I've ever seen in my life. I know I'm overselling that now. It's called Predestination.
Isn't that a new one?
It's a brand new one.
It's on the list.
It's out on iTunes, and holy crap, they did a beautiful job with that.
We've got Bill and Ted.
I love Bill and Ted. Bill and Ted does something in that movie that no other time travel movie ever did, and they used it properly. Joe Murphy actually pointed this out to me a long time ago, and that was that when they were standing outside the house, they go, well, I have a time machine, so if I was in a time machine, what would I do? I would leave a key for myself. Where would I hide it? Oh, I would put it right here behind this bush.
Like this.
Exactly. And he goes back behind the bush and he picks
you're
it up.
Right. They it's did like, that well.
Nobody ever did that before, and nobody ever has since, and it's perfect. If you have the... it's.
And
if
it fits that comedy style so well.
Exactly. And if you had the ability to do that, that's what you would do.
Right.
Just intend to do it, and then there it is.
Exactly, because intention creates the... anyway, we
but
can get
too I would have to put
that.
It in Evernote so I remember where I put it.
Yeah. What did I just tell myself?
Right. I would email my a link to whatever. All right, going down the list, Midnight in Paris, Time Cop, 1994.
Ooh, dang. Time Cop, really?
Time Crimes. Hey, time after time.
Say what you want about... Hey, I got to say one thing. Say what you want to say about Jean-Claude Van Damme's acting style. He's got some killer legs right there.
Yeah, well, there you go.
In which one? Oh.
In Time Cop.
In Time Cop.
Yes. Yeah, that was his big thing, was to be able to do those crazy splits.
Well, he was a martial artist, too.
Yeah.
Time after time.
He actually could deflect on the splits more than anybody... else in the, anyway.
Okay. Flight of the Navigator.
Army of Darkness. I agree with that one.
The Navigator, A Medieval Odyssey. There's a lot of these I haven't seen. The Time Machine from 1960.
I like the 60s version.
That
was awesome.
A classy movie. Edge of Tomorrow, which I have yet to see.
That is fantastic. That is probably one of the best movies I've seen from Tom Cruise in a long time.
It's on my list. I want to go check it out.
It kind of had that Source Code feel where he had to keep going back and just from the trailer.
It's actually better than that.
Is it?
It really is. It's a great film. It's one that I'm not a Cruise fan. So, okay. Yep. I mean, to give that high a praise for Cruise is a big thing for me.
All right.
Right. Yeah.
Hot Tub Time Machine.
Me too.
Good God. Can
we please
be
on the list?
Get away from that.
I think we're getting down to the B movies, though.
We have to be.
Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Wow. No.
Safety Not Guaranteed.
That was a good movie. I really like Safety Not Guaranteed.
About Time, The Philadelphia Experiment.
Mm.
I enjoyed that back in the 80s.
I did too, but that was in the 80s, and we were all on substances. So.
Back to the Future Part 3, hey, Interstellar.
Why is Interstellar time travel?
It's not a time travel. The time is affected by the gravity.
Exactly.
That was its big claim.
That's not time travel. That's just time effective.
Let's skim through here. What else we got? Peggy Sue Got Married. Predestination. Now that's way down there.
And that shouldn't be. That should be way on the top.
All right. X-Men Days of Future Past.
I agree with that. That was
excellent. Liked that. I really
did.
I did enjoy it.
Just as an FYI, I did hear that Gandalf and Picard will not be in the next movie.
I know. I understand that.
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Go back up to the other one.
Same reason. I'm fine with that because I do not need to see Spock in Star Trek every time I turn around.
Final Destination. Now, that movie was like the...
You mean Final Countdown?
Final Countdown, sorry. That was like the movie in my day. I mean, everybody was gaga over that. That was like the greatest time travel movie ever. And then we got smart. But, I mean, it was a cool movie for its day. I'm just...
Listener, this list goes on for another hour. So we want to hear what your choices are and where you would rank them. What are your favorite... movies, Technorama at chuckchat.com, or you know the number. All right, let's see about this code in a bullet thing. I remember seeing the story. Secret message found in World War II bullet tells the story of some stupid Nazis.
Great.
Mike, that sounds like it's okay. Up your alley. How would you like to read that?
Awesome.
That narrows it down a bit, by the way.
Oh, good.
He's got his glasses on tonight.
Thanks for giving me a cold read, but I don't do. August 13, 1944, the British 8th Army occupies Florence. The Allies finally break out of Normandy. Meanwhile, somewhere in South of Tuscany, a soldier writes this encrypted message and hides it inside of a bullet. In 2015, somebody found it and deciphered it. It was the end of a hilariously absurd story.
I think of that Monty Python sketch where they write the deadliest joke.
Yeah, I love that skit. They had to break it up into parts so that they could translate it.
That's funny. Yeah. This is a tell the enemy to fall down.
So, unfortunately, somebody got too many parts and they were actually hospitalized.
World War II, Nazis, a bullet, and a hilarious story. That's all that I can think of with this. Read on. Let's figure out how this goes.
Many people all over Europe dedicate their free time to find hidden World War I and World War II objects in old battlefields. Of course, we do that here too. It's called reenactment. A practice that is not welcomed by archaeologists and is in association of veterans alike. Okay. In fact, this practice is illegal in some countries.
Wow.
Yet, equipped with metal detectors and other treasure hunting gear, these guys go on and grab anything they can, from soldier ID tags to medals to helmets to machine guns and tanks to airplanes. Wow, that's a really screwed up sentence, but okay.
To secret Nazi research facilities.
Yeah, to secret Nazi research.
I can see how the archaeologists would hate that. Right. If you're out there digging things up, they have no context to put it in.
Basically, you're grave robbing.
Pretty much.
The same thing. So it's a hobby for some and sometimes very lucrative business for others, which is the reason everybody does it.
So what happened this time?
This time, a team of Italian metal detector fans found a few little treasures somewhere in the south of Tuscany, like this insignia for the 37th Infantry Regiment and the 8th Infantry Division. That's actually kind of cool, which apparently never fought in Italy, but was carried by a soldier with the initials DM. Thanks for that little piece of trivia. It was nice to find, but nothing out of the ordinary. A few days later, they returned to the same location to find this.
That's a fairly large caliber bullet, inside the bullet,
inverted into the case. Now, that's interesting. The bullet was actually inverted back into the case. Okay. Now then, the guy opened it back at home to find a paper inside.
If you find this,
if you build it, he will come.
Please let me out of this camp.
Drink your Ovaltine.
Help! I'm being held prisoner in a Chinese fortune cooking factory. It was a secret message. Apparently, this was a common practice that started in World War I.
Wow.
The military used the shells to hide encoded message for radio equipment ciphers, for example, or recognition codes for the units themselves or positions of stations in the form of codes.
Okay.
The bullet was removed from the case and the powder charge discharged.
It still had a powder charge in it?
Awesome.
Well, no, to empty it out, to put the note in, they got to empty out the powder.
They hid the note in the empty shell. Since ammunition could be found everywhere in the battlefield, these were very easy to hide as they mixed with the rest of the ammunition.
Ah.
Of course, it was just the junk on the battlefield.
Hiding in plain sight.
Sure. In case of capture, it was easy to discard them and throw them away immediately.
Sure. So what does it say?
Okay. My grandfather served in Italy, and I inherited all of the military gear he saved, all of his daily code books, so I looked it up.
Cool.
Here's the message. Oh, wow. Really? That's kind of interesting in itself. QM is code for the officer that was tasked with coordinating forces for a particular engagement.
Mm-hmm.
This is an engagement status letter that is addressed to the officer. Okay. The 6 5-letter code read as follows, left from top to bottom. Okay. They throw grenades. We pull pins and throw back. What?
The final code at the bottom of the
phrase says, notified reinforcements stand down. Do not need.
Not needed.
What? What? What?
Toilet paper needed. That wasn't much of a code. They throw grenades. We pull pins and throw back. Yeah, were they throwing the grenades without pulling the pins?
They were throwing grenades without pulling pins. Didn't we see that in a movie?
What sort of dumb idea is that?
Wait a minute. Wait. The enemy was throwing grenades with their safety pins on, and the American soldiers were grabbing and throwing them back with their safety pins removed. How the hell does this make any sense?
If you look down below, the Italian grenades are a little different than the German. So when they weren't pulling the right pin or pulling it correctly.
They were pulling the wrong pins.
Oh, and they weren't the kind that are shaped like a pineapple that fits in your palm these days. They were those
hand ones. They're called potato mashers is what they are. The Germans used potato masher grenades. It's interesting. Wow, I'm really showing my age today. I don't know why.
How old are you there, Grandpa?
I feel so old. But back in the day, the big joke was Germans throwing grenades, the Americans pulling pins and throwing them back. That was actually part of several jokes that I knew back in the day when we were doing military jokes.
Now they're making sense.
I wonder if this is not where that came from.
It's like Data. It's like Data. Oh, I just got that joke.
I know. It's like, holy crap, I got that joke. It only took me 45 freaking years, but I got it.
And damn, it was good.
Wow.
That's funny.
That is just okay. I'm done with this story.
Also, into the retro section, we have a what was this? What would you call this song, Scott, Craig? Surf the Net. This man took together this compilation of video infomercials from the 90s about what is the internet, and you know, I think the Katy Couric, Brian Gumbel one is even in here, and the Super Bowl made fun of it tonight.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I don't know what you would call this, just a compilation of, you know, just a mash.
But he did the auto-tune thing with some of these kids, too. So it was, yeah, you can surf the net, surf the net.
Nice.
It's really cheesy. And you have, at the end of it, I'm still just as confused at the beginning is, what is the internet and what am I supposed to do with it?
I think we're still trying to flush that out.
With a few clicks, you can just surf the net. Like, what does that mean? This isn't helping anybody. But it's a creative, catchy little tune that'll probably get stuck in your head for the rest of the day.
Remember that AOL video we talked about a while back? It had the kids going, showing their parents how to get online. And
yeah, you know,
that's all cut up in there.
Yep.
With some other stuff, too.
And then they cut to the DJ who looks more like a cross between Mr. Roboto and the Terminator.
Can you play some of it, Chuck?
Yes, I can. Let me see if I can pull this up. Just funky tribute. Come on, click the link. I don't know how to run this internet thing.
That internet thing, it's just a fad. Right, it's going to go away soon.
Oh, here, let's get rid of the ad first. 3, 2, 1. Darn ads. Okay, now I can skip the ad.
It's known as the information superhighway, a vast network of linked computers bringing the world directly into
It's all clear.
And business.
Yeah.
And it will kill us all.
On the internet. And today our destination is the World Wide Web.
Love the CRT.
Let's start with the basics first.
This is hurting my brain. I'm not sure I can watch this.
You got mail.
It'll be cool.
It'll be cool. What would possibly...
Hey, by the way, you can hear the you got mail in there somewhere.
Oh, so we're going to leave that alone for a while.
Yeah, let's move on.
All right, wearable tech. How long ago would you say wearable tech has been around, Mike?
A long, long time, actually.
According to this article, yes.
Well, yeah, when Michael was born in 1922.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that far long ago. I would have gone back to maybe the 70s.
Wearable tech was always a big thing. I mean, you got to realize that we were always aspiring to that, no matter how old. God, how is it that I all of a sudden became the geezer report here?
We have a new segment. Evidently. It's not Remember When anymore. It's the Geezer Report.
It's the Geezer Report.
Hey, I like it.
Well, you got to realize that back in the day, it was Dick Tracy with his radio wristwatch.
But those were all fantasy, though.
All it was a walkie-talkie on his wrist. Oh, freaking walkie-talkie.
And I still hear about I still hear that analogy today.
Yeah. Right. For your Samsung Galaxy Watch.
I mean, if you go back to the days of Thunderbirds, yep. You know, the whole rocket thing, you know, to the moon, and the idea of tech has always been with us, and the idea of personalizing that tech, for some reason that tech can't exist outside of the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's always about us trying to take tech to us instead of tech just being tech. You know, I guess a fair analogy would be say the steam era,
mm-hmm.
We're not trying to take steam locomotives and turn them into things that work inside of our house or stuff that we can wear on our bodies. But tech is different. For some reason, we have to incorporate it. Somehow we have to wear it. We have to have it incorporated into our lives, into our bodies, into the way that we live. No other technology has ever done that before. What is different about tech that makes us want to do that?
You're talking
about
like the integrated circuit kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's so weird because we've kind of crossed a line with the stuff that we have created in tech makes us want to be a part of it, physically be a part of it, which is
that, is
odd.
That the lure of the smartphone? Is that
yeah.
Kind of thing?
I mean, well, not only that, but I mean like the Google Glass, the cochlear implants, technology, we want to incorporate it into us. I mean, there's still the guy down in freaking Mesa where you can get the implants into your fingers,
yep.
You know, so you can actually, you can sense electrical fields. You can sense, you can sense whatever the thing
is. I sense a road trip.
Yeah.
Well, I've sensed electrical field before. It's like a key in a light socket.
But you don't actually have to stick the key in anymore. You get the magnet implanted in the tip of your finger, and you can actually sense the field without actually getting hurt by
it. That makes it a lot easier.
Let's go back to the 1920s. Many people are convinced that wearable tech will revolutionize our relationship with technology, as we were saying,
in the coming decades.
But we've been waiting for this revolution for some form or another for a century.
It's so close, though. I mean, we're actually... This article is actually wrong, and I will tell you how wrong it is. The Transhumanist Society is so into this right now. They're trying to develop this. They're trying to figure out how to do the wet wire implants. They're trying to figure out how to actually implant this into your body, make it part of you. It's not just tech that we're developing. It's mm-hmm. tech that we want to assimilate with. We're trying to become the Borg. Is what we're trying to do.
Next version of humans.
We're doing their job for them.
You're not kidding.
Yeah.
All right. The early 1920s were exciting experimental time for radio. Some people didn't even call it radio yet, since the term wireless telephone was still quite popular.
Mm-hmm.
But this 18-year-old inventor was way ahead of his time when it came to how radio could be implanted into wearable tech. The circular aerial he's holding in this picture fit neatly inside the ring of his top hat.
Mm-hmm.
And his headphones could seem to be the only thing that would give passersby any clue that he wasn't tuned into the world around him. If only. Now, here's the surprising fact. This was another interesting one. Too bad in-ear headphones were still about 4 years away.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize in-ear were that old.
They are that old.
Wow.
Yeah.
That one floored me. So they came out in 1926,
well,
and this guy was putting a radio in his top hat in 22.
It's not Apple earbuds, dude.
Right, right. It's something that fits into your...
Well, no, it's actually what I'm wearing right now.
The on-ear things?
This is what they're considering in-ear.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's about this size.
Oh, yeah,
You can see it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
similar to what
size.
The aviators had.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, it was flatter.
It was inside the ear canal. I mean, it was a little smaller than this, but it's still really close.
Gotcha.
That's a picture of the young Steve Jobs with the eye hat.
And that's it. I mean, this is basically the precursor to cell phones is what he's trying to develop here.
Yep.
And by the way, those headphones look awesome and I want a pair.
Oh, these? I love these.
Yeah, they look great. No, I mean the ones he's wearing.
The old dude, yeah.
They look great.
We have those. They're on the rack over there.
Yeah. Craig's working on visiting the studio.
Actually, those look exactly like the...
They kind of do look like the Behringer 2000s.
That's exactly what they are.
All right. Incandescent bulbs 135 years ago. Can you believe the incandescent bulb is 135 years old?
Yes, I can.
Craig, what do you make of this story?
It's enlightening.
Wait. Where's the sad trombone? Not the light. There it is. There. Can't let it go.
That's good.
Okay, I'm going to try and read this, even though my voice isn't 100% tonight. So the incandescent light bulb on January 27th, 1880, Thomas Edison was awarded a patent for the incandescent light bulb, incandescent lamp, excuse me. It was still 2 years before the first power grid would flicker on to life in New York City. And
which
Edison
Tesla
was living.
Created.
Do what?
Which Tesla created. I'm a Tesla supporter here, so this story's going to piss me off.
Sure.
No, it's not really all about that battle.
No, yeah, it's not.
And Edison was living on a precipice of a new age.
Mm.
Hey, I can make my. He was living on the precipice of a new age.
Nice.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
So, and United States patent.
Do the whole thing in that.
Yeah. United States patent number 222,898 was described as innovation whose object is to produce electric lamps giving light by incandescence, which lamps shall have high resistance so as to allow of the practical subdivision of electrical light.
That's the that's what the patent was.
The patent was for resistance. Basically, it was the carbon resistance inside the light bulb that creates light and heat without it burning out.
But the article goes on to say that, you know, the incandescent lamp is pretty much obsolete these days, and it's being replaced by LEDs and compact
fluorescence.
CFLs. But what people are doing with those old incandescents is really kind of cool. There's artists that are gathering these things up.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the video? Oh, there it is. I glanced up and suddenly it was black. I went, did we stop broadcasting? Artists are taking these things and one is making a rain cloud. So where we pull on the string, it kind of lights up like that. Another one has taken a bunch of incandescent lights and made this experiment called New Moon. And it's got kind of a capstan turn wheel from like an old ship on here. It's in the city. And there's this sphere of incandescent lights. And as you turn the capstan, the lights turn on and off gradually to show the phases of the moon. It really creative.
That's very cool.
And it goes on to say, what do you think Edison would think of A, his technology is now pretty much obsolete, and B, what these artists are doing to his obsolete technology?
However, Edison will never be irrelevant because he still has the patent on the stupid base. That medium screw base is still an Edison thing, and most of everything in the world is still based on that stupid screw base.
Even
the compact fluorescence, the LEDs and all that stuff is still under patent by Edison.
Well, because it's got to be backward compatible.
Exactly. It's because it's got to be back to that stupid square, that damn base.
Thanks. So if you were to pick a better base, what would you pick?
Well, actually, the one that's out right now, which is the E2 base, which is freaking awesome because it's a quarter turn.
That's what a spring load quarter turn like the old BNC connectors
exactly.
on the network.
You push it in, you turn it, and you're in.
That's what I would
say,
instead
of screwing the stupid things in, which gets jammed and gets locked, and you end up tearing the bulb apart in half in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Hey, I'll take the base on Yavin.
Yavin?
All right, we're going to have to find a way to get these pictures into
Rebel
the
base.
Live feed because we're getting to the end. But
Wait a minute. The other reason, by the way, Yavin, the Rebel base, Star Wars, hello.
That's the base he wanted.
I gotcha.
It's all about the
base.
One
of the reasons I put it in here was, one, because the age of the bulb, but two, on the Super Bowl that's broadcasting tonight, as we're broadcasting, they've lit up the whole field with just LEDs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, everything's gone to LED. But the cool thing that is actually happening with incandescent is that it's going retro. Have you seen a lot of the really cool Edison bulbs that are, if you go to your local home supply center, whichever one you prefer, I'm not going to tout
starts
one
with,
over the other.
Starts home with Depot. An H or an L.
Yeah, H-O-L or anyway, Menards. Anyway, but they've actually got the old Edison style bulbs that have the really long filaments and so forth. They're really beautiful, and they do some really cool things with them.
It's just like the one at the the fire department, the Livermore, California.
Yeah,
that's
mentioned in this next article.
Yeah, that's been running. That's the longest running living light bulb. That no,
like 102 years or something. It's, yeah, it's something crazy.
Still going. It's low voltage. 13. It's got extra long filament in it so that it does not get as hot as other bulbs. Not to mention it's low voltage, so it doesn't take as much power, and it will probably last forever as long as the vacuum holds.
Yep.
And the glass doesn't crack. The thing should never burn out. Forever.
It's usually the heating and cooling, though, that causes the
turning on and turning off causes the filament to burn. Yeah. Well, actually, there's engineered obsolescence in these because they're not actually as vacuum. They're not as sealed as you would like on most of them. And that started a long time ago because they realized if they made the bulbs properly, they would never burn out. So they always leave just a little bit of imperfection in there so that the vacuum will go away and the bulbs will burn out.
Hey, yeah. By the way, my luck, I'd move a ladder or something at that fire station.
Oops.
You would be the guy.
Yeah, that'd be the guy. Don't be that guy.
Yeah. Right. Don't be Craig.
Since we're dealing with old stuff, a 100-year-old box of negatives was discovered frozen in a block of Antarctica's ice.
Cool.
Yeah, and these are well, restoring one of...
Yes. That's a form of time travel, wouldn't you say?
I would say so.
Absolutely.
When you bring something forward, and these were restored pretty well, but it was painstaking. While restoring one of the exploration huts in Antarctica, conservators of the New Zealand Antarctic Heritage Trust discovered a box that turned out to be a remarkable treasure. It contained 22 never-before-seen cellulose nitrate negatives documenting the life of Antarctic explorers 100 years ago.
The reality is that the fact that those survived is just a freaking miracle on its own. Because that stuff is so absolutely volatile.
It's fragile. Yeah. Oh. After being frozen for nearly a century, the negatives had to be gently restored by first separating from one another, then cleaning, removing the mold and consolidation of cellulose nitrate image layers.
Wow.
Only after this painstaking process, they were turned into digital positives, and these are beautiful. Look at the sharpness on some of these. I mean, yes, they've got flaws around the edges where the things were stuck together and some imperfections, but look at the crispness. You could swear these were taken by a black and white camera yesterday.
Amazing.
You know, they're gorgeous. Most of them are icebergs and land and water, as you would expect, but there's some people
but
in here, too.
But it's still important. It's very important.
I mean, just gorgeous stuff. And to think it's 100 years old, it just brings it in your face today.
There was that website called Shorpy, Shorpy.
Okay.
And they reposted photos that were also very old like this, but they were like on glass plates. Excuse me. They were, you know, when they did the plating photography with the box and everything. Well, they're huge. You can look at the high resolution versions and you would swear it was like some kind of high digital copy or something, but it's
better.
The
detail
is there.
Yeah. Cause that old analog glass plate technology was phenomenal. I mean, the detail the dirty little secret is our photography quality has gone down over the years due to convenience.
Yeah.
You know, because the glass plate was a pain in the butt to actually try and take a photograph like that and develop it and do something with it. But the quality is phenomenal.
Well, I would recommend going. These are cool. So I would say check these out in the show notes. But
definitely
go to Shorpy and go look through some of their old pictures. They're beautiful. Black and white pictures. Fantastic.
Mm. All right. We have just about consumed our time, so let me take you out with this. Thank you, Michael.
That happens.
We run out of time.
We run out of time.
We need time travel to go back and do this again.
Yeah. Oh, no. No, no, no. No. Let's not relive this day over and over again.
When you go back in time,
I'm not Groundhogging Day this day. Let's find a better day, please.
Hey, Chuck, when you go back in time, just take the recorder back with you.
There we go. And I'd ask myself, where did I leave the Technorama music again? No, push the other button. Thank you for joining us, dear listener. And call the listener line if you want to talk about what your favorite time travel movies are. If you found some old pictures.
I've got one.
What do you got?
Send it in. Which day would you like to Groundhog Day? What was your best day to Groundhog Day?
Wait, tomorrow is Groundhog's Day.
February 2nd.
Right? Oh, yeah, okay.
February 2nd. So what is your favorite Groundhog Day?
206-222-CHAT. That's 206-222-2428. Or email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to hear from you. Until the next time, tell a friend about Technorama. And Craig, You think you can do this without coughing? Give me a binary high five.
101.
Thank you, sir.
How's that?
Welcome back to the Technorama 1.0 Shutdown Wrap-Up Show. I'm George Michael, and joining me once again is John Maddening.
Hello, George.
Wow, what a game.
This is one game that will go down in the Wikipedia.
Oh yeah, for sure. Let's take a look at how these teams performed.
Windows really showed their outlook, and they excelled, but exchanged that late in the game for access to the ball.
I feel they lost their focus on their core competency. I even thought I saw an Xbox in there at one point.
What was that all about?
No telling. In the end, Apple prevailed on a steady growth under guidance of Coach Jobs and his crew.
Final score, Apple 1100, Microsoft 1010.
Thanks for joining us for Technorama Bowl 1.0, and we look forward to seeing you right here again next year for Technorama Bowl 2.0 XP Pro 2007. This has been George Michaels and John Maddening.